injury to his very selfhood. It was for reasons of self-protection that Nielsen dressed in the latest fashions and spoke with affectation and placed himself as the central character of every tale. He built his persona as a shield around his person, because he knew very well how little his person could withstand.
"Pray continue," Shepherd said.
"It's about," Nielsen cast about wildly, "Mrs. Wells."
"Indeed," Shepherd said. "How so?"
"She was Lauterbach's mistress."
Shepherd raised his eyebrows. "Alistair Lauterbach was cuckold in Crosby Wells?"
Nielsen thought about it. "Yes, I suppose he was. Well, it would depend on when Crosby and Lydia got married, of course."
"Go on," Shepherd said.
The thing is, he was blackmailed. Lauterbach, I mean. And Crosby Wells took home the ransom. That's the fortune, you see, in Crosby's cottage."
"How did this blackmail happen? And how do you know about it?"
Nielsen hesitated. He did not trust the jailer's expression, which had suddenly become very greedy and intense.
"How do you know about it?" Shepherd demanded.
"Somebody told me."
"Who?"
"Mr. Staines," said Nielsen, settling upon the man to whom he could do the least damage, in the short term at least.
"Was he the blackmailer, Staines?"
"I don't know," said Nielsen, momentarily confused. "I mean, yes, maybe."
"Are you with him or against him?"
I don't know." Shepherd looked annoyed.
"What have you got on him, then?" he said. "You must have something on the man if you're not sure about your allegiance."
"There was a deed of gift," Nielsen said miserably, "in Crosby Wells' stove. Partly burned, as though someone tried to destroy it. The chaplain found it. When he went to the cottage to collect the body the day after his death. He didn't tell you about it. He kept it for himself. He didn't tell Dr. Gillies, either."
Shepherd betrayed no flicker of emotion at all. "What kind of a deed of gift?"
Nielsen briefly detailed the particulars of the contract. He kept his eyes upon a spot some 3 feet to the left of the jailer's face, and squinted oddly, for a bubble of despair was growing in his chest, pushing out against his breastbone. He had meant to reassure the jailer of his loyalty by betraying this secret. Now he saw that he had only confirmed his disloyalty and his worthlessness. And yet, despite his misery, there was something terribly relieving about speaking of the Crown conspiracy aloud. He felt that a great weight was being lifted off his shoulders, just as he felt that a terrible weightlessness was settling in its place. He glanced at the jailer quickly, and then away.
"Is Devlin your man?" Shepherd said. "Did you tell Devlin about this investment? And did he tell Lauterbach?"
"Yes," Nielsen said. "That's right." What kind of wretched man was he to accuse a clergyman? But of course, it was only half a lie, and better to accuse one man than all 12. "I mean," he added, "I only suppose he told Lauterbach. I don't know. I've never spoken to Lauterbach about anything at all, as I told you."
"So Devlin is Lauterbach's man," Shepherd said.
"I don't know about that," said Nielsen. "I don't know about that at all." Shepherd nodded.
"Well, Mr. Nielsen," he said, rising from the table, "that concludes our discussion, I think."
It panicked Nielsen still further to be dismissed. "The part about the deed," he said, "it's just, if you're going to mention it to the Reverend—"
"I imagine that I will, yes."
"Well, can you leave my name out of it?" said Nielsen, with a look of pure misery on his face. "You see, I can tell you where he's keeping it. The deed, I mean, and that way you can come upon it yourself, and there's no bridges broken on my end. Will you do that?"
Shepherd studied him without pity. "Where does he keep it?"
"I won't tell you until you give your word," said Nielsen. Shepherd shrugged.
"All right."
"Do you give your word?"
"Upon my honour, I will not speak your name to the chaplain of the jail," Shepherd snapped. "Where does he keep it?"
In his Bible, said Nielsen very sadly. In his Bible, between the Old Testament and the New. Since the construction of the jailhouse had begun in earnest, Carl Devlin and George Shepherd had not seen a great deal of one another, save for in the evenings when Shepherd returned from the construction site at Sea View to write his letters and tally his accounts. Devlin, who found the atmosphere of the temporary police camp much improved in Shepherd's absence, had not pursued a deeper intimacy with the other man. Had he been pressed to pass judgment on the jailer's character, he might, after a long pause, have conceded that he pitied Shepherd's rigidity and mourned the evident displeasure with which Shepherd seemed to regard the world around him. After another pause, he might have added that he wished Shepherd well, but did not expect the relations between them to develop beyond their present capacity, which was strictly professional and none too warm. That day was a Sunday, however, and construction on the terrace had halted for the day. Shepherd had spent the morning at chapel, and the afternoon in his study at the police camp, from which place Harold Nielsen was now very rapidly departing. Devlin, who had recently returned from the Canieri camp, was in the temporary jailhouse, preaching to the felons on the subject of rote prayer. He had brought his battered Bible with him, as he always did whenever he left his tent, though the nature of that day's sermon was such that he had had no cause to open it that afternoon. When Shepherd stepped into the jailhouse, it was lying closed upon a chair at Devlin's side. Shepherd waited for a lull in the conversation, which came about within moments, owing to his imposing presence in the room. Devlin turned an inquiring face up at him, and Shepherd said, "Good afternoon, Reverend. Hand me your Bible, would you please?" Devlin frowned. "My Bible? If you wouldn't mind." The chaplain placed his palm over the book. "Perhaps you may simply ask me what it is you seek," he said. "I pride myself that I do know my scriptures rather well."
"I do not doubt it, and yet browsing is a pleasure to me," Shepherd replied.
"But of course you have a Bible of your own."
"Of course," Shepherd agreed. "However, it is the hour of my wife's devotions, and I do not like to disturb her."
For a moment, Devlin considered extracting the purloined deed himself, but its charred aspect would surely not escape the jailer's comment, and in any case, he was surrounded by felons. Where would he hide the thing?
"What is it that you're looking for exactly?" he said. "A verse or an allusion?"
"You are very chary of your Bible for a man of God,"